Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this fine Food Friday, November 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Yep, Food Friday is back. I want to thank Judy Patrick for joining us the last several weeks for the Week in Review, but here we go. And today we're talking sweet treats and baking. On the line to answer your baking questions is Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. You got a question about baking at home? A lot of people will be at home again, I have a feeling. So maybe you want to brush up on your baking. Maybe you want to share a recipe. Give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 800-348-2551. Brimstone Bakery, and your call's coming up on Food Friday right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff, and Food Friday returns today, and we welcome back Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. Anthony has a background as a pastry chef, wedding cake designer, and restaurant chef and manager. Anthony worked in the pastry kitchen at Ironwood Cafe under Ann Belden. He was a pastry chef at Wolfgang Puck's Postrio and a managing partner of La Paloma Bakery Cafe in Eureka, San Francisco. He joined forces with Ross Wasserman, and Brimstone Bakery was born in 2018. Brimstone Bakery features a roster of cookies, tea breads, brownies, bars, cakes, a host of signature breakfast pastries such as scones, sticky buns, and quiche. Brimstone Bakery serves customers directly on its website, brimstonebake.com, and through its recently opened drive-up takeaway window each Saturday from 10 to 2. Hey, if you have a question about baking, and it's a tricky thing to do, anyone who's tried it knows there's a lot of trial and error involved. If you have a question about baking, give us a call. We have an expert here, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Anthony Liberto, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Good afternoon. Nice to be here.
It's great to have you here. Before we get to the goodies, you know, I've done thousands of these shows. My memory is notoriously horrible. But you, I remember, because before you did all this stuff, all this beautiful work, you graduated from Newhouse School of Journalism at Syracuse, and then the pastry thing happened. Remind us, now it's been a couple of years since you've been on, or over a year, remind us how that turn of events happened.
Well, I think I'd always, you know, I grew up around food. My father's family was Italian, so food and baking were sort of a big part of my life. But I always, you know, I sort of thought I should have this adult job and decided to study journalism and went to Syracuse. And when I graduated, I drove across country and I landed in San Francisco, and I started writing and editing for a paper, but I fell in love with the whole movement that was happening in the 80s with Alice Waters and sort of like the origins of what we now call farm to table. And I was really captivated by it. So I decided to, you know, quit my job and start cooking and baking with very little experience. But I learned on the job.
All right, let's talk about that learning on the job. I mean, anyone who has been in a restaurant or bakery or anything knows there are times of the day where the stress level and the tension level can be very high. And I always wondered how the newbies handle that.
The one thing I'll say is we hire a lot of young people, and I noticed that young people are very malleable. You sort of tell them what to do and they do what you ask them. And I think I was very much like that because I was kind of young and hungry. And this was like in the 80s and the 90s, and the restaurant scene was much different. I mean, it was rough and tumble, and you had to kind of be tough or learn to be tough, which I think I did, you know.
But as far as the baking, and to me, this is, it's akin to alchemy. You can know how to cook, you can make a pasta sauce, you can, you know, go out there and barbecue on the grill and be pretty good. But baking is, to me, a mystery. How did you end up doing that?
Well, I actually didn't know how to bake at all. I mean, I had baked a little bit as a kid, but that was really never my thing. And then I realized that I was a terrible baker, and I decided that I was gonna learn how to bake. So I essentially convinced this woman who had a restaurant and a bakery cafe named Ann Belden. I basically begged her to hire me and train me, and she did. And she really taught me some great lessons in just ergonomics of movement, how you move around the kitchen, what you do first. She really was incredibly knowledgeable and very patient with me from the onset and really helped me understand. So I didn't necessarily – I'm probably the least scientific baker that's out there. I mean, I work with someone here – Gordon Delpit, who's one of our bakers, and he's incredibly scientific. So he can take the artistry or the flavor profile, whatever I'm trying to convey, and then he can really break down the science and make the product exactly the way we want it.
We're joined today by Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. The number, if you have a baking question, is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Before we take our first break and then hit the phones, Anthony, you know, you started Brimstone in 2018 with Ross Wasserman, and then you got up and rolling, and then the COVID happened. How have you been dealing with the pandemic?
Well, you know, it's tricky, obviously. And we've been incredibly fortunate. I mean, when COVID first happened, you know, I initially thought, listen, we tried this. It was great. There are bigger fish to fry right now. And if this is a casualty, I was ready to accept that. But actually, that's not what happened. Many people started ordering online. They wanted care packages. They wanted to send themselves or someone else something sweet and delicious. So that was really a big boost to our window. And one of our wholesale clients in Schenectady, a cafe, they basically opened a takeout window. And one day, Ross was walking through the kitchen and he looked at this big window and he said, you know, that would make a great takeout window. And that was sort of how our takeaway bakery business started.
That's pretty amazing. And it's been working out well for you.
Yeah, we've been incredibly busy, Ray. I mean, in fact, we're super duper busy right now. All of us are spinning around. Like top.
Well, that's great.
Getting ready for the holidays, making fruitcake, making breads and cookies and biscotti. It's thrilling, but you know, it's a little scary as well.
All right, man. I'm glad you brought up the issue of fruitcake. We're going to take a break right now at 800-348-2551 because I have some questions about fruitcake and I think you know the answers. We'll be right back and then we will get to calls as well.
Excellent.
It's Vox Pop Food Friday. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs joins us today. We talk baking on this Food Friday. We're back doing the Food Fridays now. We'll get to your calls in a moment. But, Anthony, you brought up fruitcake, and thank you for sending some amazing stuff, which we'll talk about. One of those things was fruitcake. Now, it gets a terrible rap in the world. Most people think fruitcake, and you think, okay, they chiseled this brick out of a sidewalk. But what you sent is it's magical stuff. And I want you to explain to me, before we get to the calls, how you do that? How do you make one that breaks all the norms and changes people's opinions about it?
Yeah, well, thank you. I love the fruitcake. And I have to tell you, my mother for years made fruitcake, and they were like little pucks. And it was, you know, it was the brunt of many holiday jokes,
right?
My poor mother. And then I was just never, that was never on my bandwidth too much with fruit. I've made sort of like figgy puddings and like Christmas puddings before, but it was really never my thing. And then Ross really that was kind of his baby, was the fruitcake, and we started doing it, and it's really a very different thing. This is an Oxford style fruitcake, and basically you use a lot of different kinds of nuts. I think four or five different kinds of nuts. We used dried chopped figs, dates, candied pineapple, candied cherries, orange. We use two types of citrus peel as well. And we make a very intense batter. In fact, it's very hard to fold all that sort of dry stuff into this very tight batter that's basically made with spices, butter, sugar, a few eggs, and flour. And then what we do is we add a lot of rum to the fruit, which is soaked for at least a month or two. Yeah, then we bake the fruitcakes individually. So before we do anything, we chop all the fruit and nuts together and we soak it in a ton of rum. Then we make the fruitcake. Then the fruitcake comes out and I sort of baptize the fruitcake. It's an individual fruitcake. I baptize it in rum.
Nice.
And then I swaddle it in cheesecloth that's soaked in rum. And then that sits in the refrigerator for at least a month. So each batch we make is almost like a vintage of cheese or wine where it's labeled and numbered. So we have batches going back to the beginning of October. And that's what we'll roll. Then we make marzipan with egg whites and almond flour and almond paste. And we roll a thin layer over the top of it. And then we package it. And that is what's called an Oxford-style fruitcake from Oxford, England.
Well, okay, that's Oxford style. What other styles are there?
The Oxford style, there are many different styles, but I say what distinguishes the Oxford style
is the nuts.
This sort of layer of marzipan, which the British, you know, they love marzipan.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's amazing stuff. And, you know, we have this great commentator on the weekends, Ralph Gardner Jr., who is hilarious. And years ago, he did one of his first commentaries was about fruitcake. And part of it, he said, you know, there is no known shelf life for fruitcake. Why don't you disabuse Ralph and the rest of us on that? How long will your fruitcake actually last? If I sat it on the counter, how long before I have to toss it?
Well, firstly, I would recommend that you refrigerate it. And if you refrigerate it, it will really last a long time. Like, it is pretty much mummified with all the alcohol. Now, I would say at least safely like 4 or 5 months in the refrigerator.
All right, fair enough.
And you really want it, because that will really preserve it. But there is not necessarily anything in there that can spoil, because everything, again, is cooked through completely, and then there's this added layer of embalming from the alcohol.
Mummified with alcohol. You know, that describes many a broadcaster, too. Let's go to the phones. Adrian. Adrian in New Paltz, you're on.
Hey, hello there. I wonder if your guest could comment on sourdough. Just give me a basic primer. Dunkin' Donuts just launched a new breakfast sandwich with some pretty decent-tasting sourdough bread. And I just wonder what the history was. I mean, everybody knows, yeah, sourdough is a starter. And I think it went back to the San Francisco 49ers or something like that. He's an expert. I bet he can give us a quick a primer on sourdough.
All right. Thanks. Well, Anthony, you know anything about that?
I don't really know a lot about sourdough, to tell you. I mean, I know that starters are, you know, very coveted. And I know the origin from it is certainly San Francisco, but I really don't know a ton about it. I have to apologize.
And you,
I'm not really, we don't necessarily here at Brimstone do a lot of traditional European and style yeasted breads. We do more pastries. So that tends to be more of my purview.
But, you know, you do some wonderful savory things. The ham and cheese scone, incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible, man, really. I mean, tell us about that one before I go to the next call.
Well, we always, you know, we do delicious lemon and blueberry scones with a glaze. It's something that I've been doing for 30 years. We wanted sort of a savory companion to that, and I basically took the sweet scone concept and added rosemary. We added a little cream to it. We added scallion, ham, and cheddar, and then we roll it. We slice them, we bake them, and we top them with cheddar as well. Mm. And they also work incredibly perfect with a breakfast sandwich as well. Like, you could slice them and add an egg if you want, or some scrambled eggs. They're great.
Really nice. All right, back to the phones we go. 800-348-2551. It's Food Friday. Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. Chris is in Housatonic. Chris.
I don't know if this can be done or not, but could you make green tea cakes and as well as some papaya cookies for the holidays, and also passion fruit cakes too?
Passion fruit cakes, green tea cakes, and whatever else. Anthony.
Those sound delicious. Those aren't something that we necessarily do, but I will say one of the things we make here is actually a green tea cheesecake. We actually use our biscotti crumbs for the base of the cheesecake that sort of substitutes for the graham crackers, and then we do use matcha green tea in the foundation of the cheesecake. And they're, by the way, they're delicious.
All right, Chris. Okay, thank you for the call. Over to Joy in Monterey. Joy, you're on.
Yes, I'd like to know if there's some recipe you could provide for a non-yeast bread that's very crusty with a thick crust. Is that possible?
I think I wouldn't know that, only because I feel like the crust is definitely a byproduct of the yeasted bread. So that's not something necessarily we do here. We do more tea style breads here, which are served with tea or with as dessert.
So sweetened, in other words, a sweet type bread.
Yes.
Okay. And then I'm looking for some. I don't know if you can do it even.
We do brioche here. We do brioche rolls and we do brioche sticky buns, and that gets a very nice crispy crust. But again, that is yeasted.
Okay. Maybe that's an impossibility. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
of
Joy.
Of course. Thank you.
Have a great weekend. We're joined today by Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. The number to call on this Food Friday is 800-348-2551. Got an email from Andy in Ames and wants to know how you came up with the name Brimstone Bakery.
Oh, yeah. Well, that I can definitely answer, because we're in Sharon Springs, New York, which is a very old spa town. We are about 40 miles west of Albany. And the stream of water that runs through town is called Brimstone Creek. Oh. And brimstone is really another name for sulfur.
Right. So there's no real witch connotation with your bakery, nothing going on in the back that we should know about?
Not that I'm aware of. No supernatural activities right now.
All right. Well, that's a diplomatic answer. Chris in Albany, you're on with Anthony Liberto.
Hi. I was wondering if you have any familiarity with Vietnamese bread that's just everywhere in Vietnam or in communities with large Vietnamese population that they make their sandwiches out of. It's a very light crumb, close crumb bread with a very thin crust. It's extremely crisp. I've been looking for a source for it, and just thought I would ask if you have any familiarity with that.
I don't specifically, but I do know that all the Vietnamese sandwiches that I have ever had are generally on a baguette. And I've come to understand that that's really about the French influence. So generally when I've had many amazing Vietnamese sandwiches in either Albany or New York City, and they're generally always, the ones that I've had are on baguette, French baguette.
Well, yeah, that's sort of the equivalent, but a French baguette that you could get here is nothing like the baguette that you would get there, and there's quite a difference in the weight of it and the thickness of the crust and so on. But I appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm sorry I don't have a lot of familiarity with that.
Hey, aren't you happy, Anthony? We have so many bread questions here today.
I know, a lot of bread questions today. I'm impressed.
Next time, you know, you get your bread encyclopedia handy when you're on the show. And just in case, the number here is 800-348-2551. Anthony Liberto is here from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. Last time you were on, and I don't remember when it was a year or two ago.
It was March or April.
So not even a year.
COVID makes everything feel like it was a lifetime ago.
You are not whistling Dixie, man. Let's go to Beth in Turner's Falls. Beth.
Hi. I wanted to know, what is the difference between frosting, icing, and a glaze?
Ah.
Oh, well, that I can definitely help you with. A frosting can generally be a buttercream, and it tends to be suspended, and icing generally can just be, you know, made predominantly with sugar or some other fat, and the glaze can be a ganache or something that you would pour over, and that generally has to do with also the amount of liquid as well and the pourability as well.
Okay, thank you so much.
Does that help you? Yeah,
it does very much. Thank you.
Beth, have a great weekend. Thank you very much. Anthony Liberto joins us today. The number is 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And let's go to Pittsfield. Mary, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Hey there.
Hi.
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 Yeah, I have a question about a fruitcake recipe that's from my Irish grandmother. And I've tried to make it a few times, but it's a flop. I have kind of incomplete instructions. And after I put in all the ingredients, it just says to put it in a pan and to bake it for an hour and a half. It doesn't have what size pan, or there's no mention of soaking it or in alcohol, and there's no mention of how long to store it.
Hmm.
But I remember that it used to be up on a shelf. I can remember that. But I just was wondering if you could give me some advice on how to try to make this a success.
Okay.
Sure. I don't know the volume of your recipe, but the first thing I might recommend is that you bake it in a shallow dish or pan, and you probably want it to be 2 to 3 inches high, I would say. Maybe probably about 2 inches high. What we do here at Brimstone is we actually spray the pan. We actually put a piece of parchment in the pan with extended sides, and then we actually pat the parchment over the top surface of the fruitcake. We generally bake it for about an hour and a half, but at a lower temperature, around 300. And then in terms of soaking, we soak our fruit before we put it into the fruitcake. And then once the fruitcake is actually made, the batter, and it's baked, then we take it out and we wrap that in cheesecloth. It's soaked in some sort of – we use rum.
Yeah. So do you think
I don't know if that helps you a lot, but that's generally how we treat our fruitcake because it's so dense. We bake it at a lower temperature.
A lower temperature meaning like 300?
Yeah, exactly. Standard baking is 325 to 350, and we like to do it at about 300.
Okay. All right. All righty.
Mary, good luck
with
that.
Thank you.
Let us know how you did. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Quickly, let's get one more in before our next break, and then we will take a short break and get back to the home stretch. Anthony Liberto joins us from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs. If you have a baking question, give us a call. Plenty of time left. 800-348-2551 is the number. Nona in Austerlitz. Nona.
Hi, it's another fruitcake. It's not exactly a question. It's a comment.
Okay.
I was raised on fruitcake, and I loved it. And the fruitcake that my mother made had absolutely no alcohol, her being a Quaker background.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept well. It was probably drier than your fruitcake. When I make it now, I make it with the alcohol. But I think there's something about the dried fruit itself that preserves it, because it you know, it would keep very well as long as it was wrapped. It wouldn't mold. It kept well. So I don't know scientifically what explains it, but I think the dried fruit has some preservative properties. That's my hunch.
What do you think, Anthony?
I do. I would concur, because again, it's dried and the water and the bacteria is taken out of the fruit, and it's very dense in its properties. And our fruitcake is probably 60 to 65% dried fruit and nuts, and a smaller percentage of flour.
Right.
So, and again, because there's alcohol in it and it's wrapped, it stays moist for quite a long time.
Right. Well, thank you. So any teetotaler out there can still enjoy cake.
Hey, Nona.
Put enough dried fruit in it.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a quick break here. Anthony Liberto is our guest from Brimstone Bakery. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop, it's Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, and the number is 800-348-2551. Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs joins us today. And a couple of people on the line, I see subject headings, and I just want to let you know we can't really take orders over the phone. But I think a lot of people, Anthony, are going to want to order your fruitcakes. And again, it's kind of not in the public radio rules that we can do that. But how do people get in contact with you guys?
Oh, thanks, Ray. Well, actually, you can place orders online at www.brimstonebake.com. We have our takeaway window at 922 Chestnut in Sharon Springs. You can come by tomorrow from 10 to 2. You can also call us as well and place an order that way, which is 518-416-4159 as
okay.
Well.
All right, fair enough. Well, we have some emails here, and this from John in High Falls. It says, you might mention to the woman who called asking about crusty, unyeasted bread that she try Irish soda bread. No yeast, it can have a nice crust. That's a good point, right?
Yeah.
All right, this one from Karen. Not sure where Karen is writing from. Do you do any gluten-free baking or have any tips for baking gluten-free?
We do. Yeah, we actually do gluten-free brownies. We do our chipotle, sea salt, and milk chocolate brownie, and that's gluten-free.
Oh, we had that last time. I remember that. Yeah, the chipotle in that.
You had that. Yeah,
yeah,
you
awesome.
Might have the regular version. We do a gluten-free version of that as well. We do gluten-free lemon drops that basically have candied lemon zest in them. They're delicious, and lemon sugar. And then we do a gluten-free ginger snap, which is the same version of our ginger snap, but just with gluten-free flour. And then we also do gluten-free chocolate chip cookies.
You know,
and we use all of our own recipes. We just substitute out what they call a one-for-one flour.
You know, gluten-free is tough, and it's tricky. I'm sure you guys have worked on this for mm-hmm. a while to get it down. I know that things like, I don't like it very much, although I've had some good baked goods that are gluten-free, but I bought some gluten-free pasta by mistake the other day. I got my head handed to me. It doesn't come out very – it's not exactly the same, you know?
Yeah, it's very starchy because it's often made with potato as well.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have gluten. And I find gluten-free pasta, again, it's a little starchy for my palate.
But you figured out a good way to translate the gluten-free recipes and flour into good baked stuff. So that's good.
We do, yeah. And, you know, the thing, too, for us and for me in particular is that the flour is really the key. A lot of gluten-free flours are made with legumes or, like, ground legumes, and they tend to have a really, for me, a pungent aftertaste. We tend to use gluten-free flour with – it's mostly rice flour. And the cookies are delicious.
Nice.
They're, you can barely tell the difference in the varieties that we do. They're delicious.
We are joined today by Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. One final email, and then we'll jump back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Amy in New Paltz writes, "Hello, baking fellows. I love a good buttercream. What are some pointers to success in making Swiss buttercream and French buttercream? Last time I tried, it was an utter failure," and that's from Amy in New Paltz.
Well, I'll say I don't know a lot about bread sometimes, but I know a lot about buttercream. So right. I can definitely we do a Swiss meringue buttercream here, and I think the key we heat the egg whites and the sugar over a bain-marie, which is this gently simmering bath of water. I like to take the sugar content until just till it melts. So you want the egg white mixture to be not hot, but warm to the touch, but you shouldn't be able to feel the granules of sugar anymore. Then we whisk that on the mixer at high until a meringue forms, and then I add half the butter to that, and then we generally switch to the paddle and add the final half of butter, and we beat that for about 15 minutes afterwards and get a very smooth, beautiful, luscious, creamy Swiss meringue buttercream. And it's very easy to, you know, make it peanut butter or make it chocolate. We've made it malted milk before. So you can take a basic Swiss meringue buttercream recipe and make many different frostings out of it, which we like here.
Yeah, well, I like that too. You know, it's so funny. The trick then to making a good buttercream is to really beat the butter, right? Because my youngest daughter last week said, "I'm going to make cupcakes." Okay, you make cupcakes. And she wanted to put buttercream on it. Well, the cupcakes came out fantastic. They were perfect. The buttercream, I barely know where the kitchen is in my house. But the buttercream came out, and you could almost taste chunks of butter. So something went, was the butter too cold? Did she not beat it enough? I have no idea.
Yeah, sounds like the butter was a little cold. So again, you want to use soft butter, not too soft, but soft butter. And really, you want to beat it, and you want to mix the air into it. That's really the whole process.
Uh-huh.
That's what makes it creamy and light. So she probably just needed a little bit more beater action, I think.
Okay, well, you know what? It was still good. I mean, I'll eat butter straight up, so it was a little buttery. Let's let's go to Charles in Greene County. Charles, you're on.
Hi. I got a little bit of history going here.
Okay.
With fruitcake, I guess it's a fruitcake show. It was originally, not originally, but it was bride's or groom's cake. Way back, my grandmother had a bride's cake, and my mother did her groom's cake. They had a regular cake that they ate, and then a fruit cake that they cut and gave as souvenirs.
Ah.
My mother had been to a wedding in the 30s, okay, a celebrity wedding, actually, and she had her piece of fruit cake that she brought home. I was born in 1948. When I was 9, I found it in a desk.
Oh, my God.
I started to nibble on it, and it was still soft. It was sweet.
Okay.
And I didn't die.
Charles, I'm going to hurl. Okay, that's
like
a 27-year-old piece of cake you had.
Yeah. But it was fine. It was absolutely fine. And it was like a 2-inch square piece of cake.
Our legal department, Charles, our legal department just handed me a note. We are not advocating anyone eat 20-year-old pieces of cake of any kind, all right?
Do not do this at home.
Oh,
do not do this at home.
All right, man. Well, thanks for that.
The other thing is the recipe that my mother had for a fruit cake called for 2 cups of sugar and 4 eggs and about a half a cup of flour. And I'm wondering if it was the sugar that kept our fruit cake moist and long lasting
for all those decades. Well, what do you think, Anthony?
Well, no, this is
I think for sure sugar will do that. That's why, you know, jams and jellies stay for so long because not just the way they're packed, but the sugar content. So that would, and then when you add all the dried fruit, the sugar in the fruit, the dried fruit is very concentrated because fruit is essentially sugar and water. And so when you dry it, you're taking the water out, but you're concentrating all of those sugars. So I am not surprised. I mean, 20 some years is pretty amazing, but I mean, I know, I'm sure our fruitcake could last a year. And like I said, keep it refrigerated.
All right. Hey, man, thanks for that one, Charles. Great call. 800-348-2551. So, Anthony, in the back room, you don't have a fruitcake that, you know, 10, 12 years old, and you're just going to keep it and see what happens?
No, I'm sure my mom has one in her freezer, though. We could break it out. I could let you know how that is.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you live, you could always drop us an email. Chris in Mastic, New York. Chris, you're on. Hello, Chris. Hello, Chris. Are you there? Oh, Chris is not there. Chris? Okay. Well, thank you. If you call back, we'll put you on the air. Now we go to Schoharie and Elaine. You're on.
Hi. I'm making sticky buns, and before I go ahead and do them, the best way to rise the dough, I've been reading there are two ways. You can put it in the refrigerator, or you can put it in a warm place. My kitchen isn't especially warm, say like 70 degrees. So what would you recommend? Refrigerator leave it out?
We leave ours out for a one rising for a little bit. Then we wrap it up. We beat it down. We wrap it up. We put it in the refrigerator overnight. And then tomorrow morning, when I roll our sticky buns that we do on Saturday mornings, when I roll out the dough is very cold. I roll them out. I prepare the sticky buns, and then we let those rise for about 2 hours before we bake them. So they get a little tiny rise in right after they're made, and then we refrigerate them. That's how we tend to do it here.
Okay. Yeah, you leave them in the refrigerator, say, overnight?
Yeah, just wrap it up in cellophane for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks a bunch.
Elaine, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We're joined today by Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York. And let's go to Bob in Cobleskill. Bob.
Yeah, just a quick question. On the fruitcake that they make, are the nuts in it toasted? Are the variety of nuts toasted or raw?
No, they're raw. We don't toast our nuts because, again, we bake it in a cake for a little over an hour. So those get, you know, they're not getting toasted, but we don't want to toast them and then bake them again because they have a chance that they could burn or overcook. And, again, because they're soaked in alcohol, they have a very different texture to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Yeah.
And we're joined today by Anthony Liberto, and the number is 800-348-2551. We go to our buddy Layla in Mount Tremper. Hello.
Hi, can you hear me?
You bet.
Okay, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to give a shout-out to a very funny Irish song called Miss Fogarty's Christmas Cake, F-O-G-A-R-T-Y, Mrs. Fogarty's Christmas Cake. And it addresses all the ins and outs of Christmas cake. I suggest people want to laugh to go onto YouTube and find that song.
Layla, you're here. Why don't you sing us a few bars?
Yeah.
You know, let's see. Last two lines, I'll just give you a hint, is, yes, it would kill a man twice after eating the slice of Miss Fogarty's Christmas cake.
Yes. Layla, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate the call.
You're very welcome.
Have a good one. You see, Anthony, people sing on our show. It's very exciting. Let's go to Ginger in Kingston. Ginger, you're on.
I love it.
Hi. I have a question for Anthony. Not really, kind of a question. When I was a kid, my auntie married an Italian fellow, and we went down to see them in Brooklyn, New York, and he took us to a bakery, and he got a bunch of cakes, toasty breads and cakes. And being of Irish background, we didn't know what they were called. But anyway, we got back to the house and he ate about three of these things. They looked like a cupcake with a big mushroom top on them, and he said they were rum bums. And he would eat two or three and then act like he was drunk. And so we started calling him Uncle Rummy. And for as long as I knew him until he passed, he was always Uncle Rummy. So when he passed, we didn't know his name was Roberto. But I often wonder, what are rum buns? I asked once for a bakery around here if they had any rum bums. And they looked at me like I had four heads. But I think that it was a real thing. It was like a cupcake with a really sweet licorice or liquory tasting whatever on the bottom of it.
Hmm.
And like an egg cream in the middle.
That sounds delicious. I'm hungry and thirsty at the same time.
What they really are. I'm just wondering what they're really called. They're not called rum buns, evidently.
Hmm. What do you think, Anthony?
Well, I think it's like many, Italian and European pastries where they have pastry cream. Italians love to soak things with rum or anisette, so I'm sure it's a version of that. I've seen many things like that, actually, in Italian bakeries, like traditional Italian-American bakeries in either Queens or Brooklyn. So, they sound delicious, and I'm sure that's just regular pastry cream with a lot of rum or anise or, one of those delicious Italian liqueurs.
Ginger.
Oh, okay.
So
there is such a thing.
You know, my buddy Rocco DeFazio is going to be on for the Italian Christmas show we always do every year here on Food Friday, sometime late December.
Uh-huh.
You got to call up and ask him about this. And then we'll also talk about his hangover cake, which is just doused in booze. It is fabulous, man. It's great. Anyway, Ginger, thanks for the call. Let's quickly grab another one here. And Susan in Pittsfield. Susan, you're on.
Hi. I have a question, actually a twofold question. I have a bumper crop of persimmons, which someone sent me, and I have no idea what to do with them. So I was thinking of like pureeing the fruit part and then folding it into a pastry cream or something, but I don't know if I can just fold it into make like a basic pastry cream and fold it in, or fold it into a buttercream, or if I have to reduce liquid or something somewhere else. And the second part of the question is, do you have any idea what to do with persimmon?
That's a really great question. I've always cooked persimmon. It's like an apple. So if you cook it and puree it, it's going to be a little granular. So I probably wouldn't recommend necessarily like folding it into pastry cream or a buttercream. But what I would recommend doing, and you can find a lot of great recipes, is making a persimmon pudding, which I think is delicious. So you would cook the persimmon, you would actually puree it, but you would actually make sort of like a steamed pudding out of it, which is really delicious, kind of like a bread pudding. And that's wonderful.
Oh.
And that's the thing that I always have done with persimmons. I've never done anything else with them except make a persimmon pudding. And I generally make it this time of,
What now, like when you say a pudding, you mean like a British Christmas pudding kind of pudding, or just like with persimmon, like I'm not going to need the fruit and all that other kind of stuff that goes into that thing?
No, not at all. It's kind of like a steamed cake that they call a pudding. The Italians call it a budino, but it's actually got some flour in it as well, and eggs and dairy, and it makes this sort of very dense, warm cake.
Oh, well, thank you very much, because now I'm not worried that my persimmons are going to
sure
go by the by.
A lot of recipes, too.
All right, Susan, thanks a lot. Quickly now, we only have about 30 seconds. Carl in Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Yeah, down here in our best Italian restaurant, which is called La Deliciosa, they call them rumbabas, the thing the lady was asking about.
Rumbabas?
And, yeah, and I got some extra poundage on me to prove that it's good. Okay?
Hey. All right. Well, thank you, Carl. All right, Anthony.
Rumbabas it is.
Rumbabas. Anthony Liberto, once again, how do people find you guys online?
Oh, www.brimstonebake.com.
And you have all your other contact info and number and everything else on there?
Oh, we do. Yeah. Okay. And we're in Sharon Springs, not too far away. And we're open tomorrow from 10 to 2. And we'll have our sticky buns and our scones and our ham and cheese scones as well.
Fantastic.
And we have I should just tell you, lastly, Ray, we have an apple cranberry crumb cake, which is delicious.
Oh, well,
that's
love that.
Really nice combination that we do this time of year as
You didn't send that along. All right, next time. Hey, Anthony, thanks.
I'm sorry.
Thanks a lot, man. Great job. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great holiday.
Thanks, Ray. You too. Thank you so much. Have a great day. It was a pleasure.
Support comes from Berkshire Food Co-op in downtown Great Barrington, a grocery store with a mission to provide clean, whole foods to all friends and neighbors. Everyone is welcome. Berkshire.coop. Big Y, family-owned and operated market with locations throughout the Berkshires. Celebrating more than 80 years of serving communities throughout New England, BigY.com. At Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine and spirits retailer for over 40 years, providing products from classic to new labels, spirithaus.com. Once again, thanks to Anthony Liberto from Brimstone Bakery in Sharon Springs, New York, for joining us today. Thanks to our engineer. It's not Zach Malloy today. It's Rob Chacon. Barb King came in again and answered the phones, and thank you, Barb, for that. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Now, have a safe weekend. This COVID thing is not going away. Wear the mask. We'll see you on Monday.